You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 27th of November. The Jazz offense continues to explode. Rodney Hood's making me smile. Your Swiss power forward, say that 10 times fast, is pretty darn good and will NBA 5 it as well. It is Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Thanks so much for tuning in. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Back in the swing of things, hopefully we can give you a few minutes of enjoyment. And today, as you get back into the workflow after a good few days with a family or something of the sort, I hope that's the case. I've already screwed up really big time today. I'll tell you about that in a second. But here's the plan. I'm going to try something. I'm going to try to feature the last segment of every show. Today will be NBA 5. Tuesdays will be Flashback Tuesday. I know it's Throwback Thursday, but we have Facebook Live on Thursdays. NBA 5 on Wednesday, Facebook Live on Thursdays, and then PAC Friday. I wonder if there's some other thing we could do Wednesday, but I thought NBA 5. There's been some requests for it to come back, which is kind of a run around the NBA, though we do NBA every day, just really specifically. We'll look at that. We'll see if it works. If it sucks, tell me. My Flashback Tuesday idea is just to pick a random year in the history of the Utah Jazz and go see what they were doing on this date and that time period, who was playing, what was going on. Just look at back at history and just kind of remember old players is a little bit of my thought on that. We'll see if it's any good. I'll tell you how I screwed up in a second, but let me tell you that today's show is brought to you by Slow the Flow. Even during winter, there are things you can do in your homes to save water. Learn water-wise tips at slowtheflow.org. It's also brought to you by Murdoch Chevy. I am driving a big, honking, white Chevy Silverado truck, and it's a whole lot of awesome. And you can all – Tony Jones, Salt Lake Tribune, came out of practice the other day. He's like, dude, I got to admit, there's nobody I ever thought would not be driving this car. And he might be right, but let me tell you, maybe they should have done this earlier with me, because this is how you learn how you like something. Like, now I get it. Man, is it cool. All right, we'll talk more about what's going on at Murdoch Chevy. Here's how I screwed up. I set the alarm for 5:45 p.m. and rolled over at 7:30 and was like, oh, crap. And I don't usually even sleep till 7:30 because I don't really sleep very well. My brain starts usually earlier than that. So, yeah, so the kids are late to school. My poor wife has to drive from Park City to Salt Lake this morning while I do this podcast. So please support our sponsors and send my wife notes about what a great guy I am and how much you appreciate it, because you've got to be really pissed off at me about this. Oops. Oops. I screwed up. I usually am up 5:45. We now have a Peloton bike, so I'll do that, or I do yoga, or I do something, and then I go see the kids and get them ready, and I usually take care of the mornings, and I certainly didn't today. All right, let's talk about your Utah Jazz, who are now 4-4 since Rudy Gobert's gone out, and the game against Milwaukee was just fun. Frankly, and I have good friends on the Milwaukee Bucks staff, so I feel like kind of bad saying this, but it just feels when Milwaukee plays Utah that it's Quinn Snyder versus Jason Kidd's unfair. I don't think that it's what it feels like. I'm not lying to you. But what I think is going on there is that Milwaukee plays a different style of defense than anyone else in the league. They, no matter what your pick and roll is, they bring two guys to the ball for a period of time. They overshift to the strong side of the ball more than any team. And Quinn Snyder is unique in his amount of preparation he puts in to a single game of 82. There might not be another coach in the NBA that puts in as much prep on a given night. I remember 3 years ago, we were in Milwaukee for a game, and Milwaukee's offense at the time was largely predicated on a pass to the, it sounds weird, but they started their offense with a pass to the elbow to Zaza Pachulia, who's a pretty good passing big. And Quinn Snyder had figured out, it might have even been on a back end of a back-to-back, that if we denied that pass to the elbow, that it blew up every single aspect of Milwaukee's offensive rhythm, play, all their movements, and they would just delve into one-on-one stuff. And we killed them that night, and we did exactly that. And that's kind of the night I went to, like, oh, wow, this is totally different. This guy is preparing every single regular season game like it's an NBA playoff game. And his preparation is just immaculate, so detailed, it's remarkable. And so because of that, where I think a lot of teams struggle to play Milwaukee, commit a lot of turnovers, and are stunned a bit by how Milwaukee plays defense differently than everyone else in the NBA, the Jazz, on the other hand, are so brilliantly prepared that they exploit it. And that's what they did on Saturday night. They just ran circles around Milwaukee's defense all night long with 31 assists, incredible ball movement. My wife, who is a huge sports fan, former sideline reporter for the Seattle Seahawks and longtime sports reporter, I mean, this is not a comment from someone who's kind of ignorant to what's going on. She made the comment, I actually got nervous because they would pass so much that there was like, it was time for them to shoot, and they would make one more pass and one more pass. Milwaukee over the years has given up the most corner threes in the NBA. I think there's some argument that they might have actually even changed some of their defensive schemes based on the way the Jazz exploited them last year in one of their matchups. And the Jazz kind of did it again. The Jazz got 13 corner three shot attempts against Milwaukee. What does that mean? The league average is that you take at most, 7% of your shots as a corner three. I think that's kind of the top there is. Let me see if I can pull that up for you. And so for the Jazz to be taking 13 of their 81 shots as corner threes just means you're doing something that just doesn't exist in the rest of the league to be playing at that level and that kind of ball movement. And that's just Quinn's defensive preparation. The corner threes in the league are 7.4% of shots. So the Jazz doubled that against Milwaukee, who's worked actually really hard to kind of change some of their schemes. They just torched them. They didn't get many stops, but just torched them. And hit shots, right? We talk so much about make or miss league. Let's not kid ourselves. But the Jazz, when the Jazz season started, I did an analysis on how our three-point shooting should be fine. And then it wasn't at all. And now it's excessively hot. It actually doesn't make, it's got to come back down to life. I know, I hate it when I say that, and then it's true. And then I've been uncannily bad at being the precursor to what bad moments might be coming for the Utah Jazz. So I'm telling you that logic would say that there's one coming here. Sorry. Don't mean to ruin the day, but the Jazz above the break 3-point shooting was 11 of 19. In the above the break 3-point shooting the last 8 games is 39.8%. That's a little high. It's not outrageous. Their corner three shooting's at 50%. That is a bit outrageous. They're 15 of their last 26 from the corner three because Joe Ingles can't miss and a few other guys are hot. Nonetheless, So that's, the Milwaukee game in a nutshell is the Jazz just impeccable preparation led by Quinn and then brilliant player execution. It doesn't matter how good the coach is if the players don't execute it, and these guys are finding themselves a little bit. And what I am seeing right now, at least offensively, is a little bit of the rightful order of the basketball universe. And what I mean by that is, when the year started, every single guy on this roster started to try to do things to fill the gap that existed. And it's not like being, in some teams it might be a case of someone being really selfish and trying to do too much. In this case, I really believe it was guys trying to do what they thought were best. Joe Ingles, was trying to put the ball on the floor and make plays. And the other day, I was with Joe and he just simply said, I'm just going to do what I do, which is, absolutely the right answer for Joe Ingles. Tabo Cephalosha was trying to become a little bit of a scorer because, you know, he could look across and see that Rodney Hood had missed his last whatever amount of shots, and Ricky Rubio was feeling freed and given incredible freedom by Quinn Snyder to be a player he was never allowed to be at any point in his career, and was overshooting, and it was disastrous, and the game against Minnesota was probably embarrassing against his former team. And so what do we? And he's now has not taken more than 10 shot attempts in a game since then, and looks much more in control and playing the game as you'd want him to play. So we're beginning to see guys, I think, come back into themselves and be successful. Like Joe Ingles, here's a good example. In the last seven games, Joe Ingles has taken three shots that are not at the rim or three-point shots. Okay, three. So he's taken two mid-range shots and one shot in the paint, non-restricted. He's 0-for-3 on those. Prior to that, he had a game with five of those, another game with three, a bunch of games with three of those. He's a combined 5-of-23 on those shots. That's not what he does. That's frankly, to be able to score in the mid-range or in the paint, you got to be a pretty special player. And what Joe does is shoots threes and gets to the basket subtly. He's actually a little bit stopped going to the basket. He's just shooting threes. Okay. And everybody wanted Joe to shoot more, and he could feel that. I heard everyone talking about, oh, Joe's got to shoot. But all that does is ask Joe to do something that's beyond his natural realm of a player. And we just had every single guy going beyond their natural realm as a player, and we were a disaster. Either coincidentally getting less, more spacing with Rudy being hurt, or just natural time, as Quinn Snyder's teams have over the years. If you look back at this time last year, we weren't shooting the three well, and then we just got better as the year went on because of how incredibly he is coaching. That's what happens. So here, that's what I'm seeing on this team right now, is that we're beginning to have a rightful order of the basketball universe. I want to talk about Rodney. I want to give you some of the numbers on that as well, and I want to talk about what Jonas and Tabo have combined to do. So we'll do that as well. I want to tell you about Slow the Flow as well. Even during the winter, there are things you can do that will help save water. In fact, if you think about it like an athlete, like if you think of PER, player efficiency rating, right? I don't use it a lot, but Stockton was like, you know, and Malone. Well, then Slow the Flow has WER, which is water efficiency rating. You can boost your WER through a few small, easy changes around the house. So you can install a low flow toilet, and you'll save about 0.3 gallons per flush, which doesn't sound like a lot, but flushes add up. Another way to boost your rating is by taking showers instead of baths, keeping them under 5 minutes. With a 5-minute shower, you use about 12 to 25 gallons of water. A full tub uses about 70 gallons. That's a huge difference. Little by little, small changes will take your WER, my WER, and we'll be all-star levels and help everything, help the world. So it wouldn't be surprised if Slow the Flows, you know, then build statues of all of us, right? If we can have PERs like Stockton and Malone. All right. For those of you who want to boost your WER, head to slowtheflow.org. Please do. Go to slowtheflow.org. Slow the Flow. Save H2O. The offense in the last 8 games has an offensive rating of 111.4. It is the third best in the NBA over that time period. 5 of the 8 games without Gobert, the Jazz have hit 14 or more threes. 38% of those shots that they've taken have been threes. They're shooting 38% of their shots as threes, which would put them as about third in the league. They have made 42% of those shots. Wow. Now that might be high, right? That quick take on that is, ooh, there's a little lack of sustainability there. There is something, though, to what's going on here where Quinn has gotten himself a lineup that can do what he likes to do. So, frankly, Quinn has figured out a way to be successful, largely defensively, with the Favors-Gobert lineup, which wasn't having a great year. The difference, though, now is he's spreading the floor and moving the ball. And some of the difference are pretty clear. Per 48 minutes, and I'll give you kind of, I'll match apples to apples here. First of all, the Favors-Gobert lineup, which also might be because it's playing with Ricky Rubio, so now you have three non-shooters on the floor. The Jazz were shooting 34% from three. When the two of them were on the floor, they took the fewest amount of threes of any two-man group that the Jazz have in that time period. And they didn't make them, right? So, you know, that's probably a bigger issue is that they didn't make them. But part of this game is getting those threes off. So, as I said, the percentage of field goal attempts the Jazz were taking that were three-point shots since they've gone to one big is 38%. When Favors and Gobert are on the floor, it's 32%. So it's a huge shift in who we are offensively. 32%, by the way, is the lowest we have of any two-man group other than actually Tabo and Derek, which may be left over from, it's hard, I haven't separated Rudy out of those. I didn't take the time to do it. I apologize. So, again, the last eight games, our offensive rating is a 114, which is third best in the NBA, and the three is our number one weapon. So we're spreading the floor, getting the defense spread, moving the ball. Five of our last eight games, we've had 55 points in the first half. Four of the last eight, we've had 60 points in the first half. Six of the last eight games, we've had an offensive efficiency of 110 or more. That 110 is, you know, Warriors are at like 116, but 110 is pretty much like top level. This is really interesting. Four of the eight games, we have 20 or more points off the other team's turnovers. And then we had Favors playing the power forward, spacing to the corner three, and nobody's guarding him. Now that we don't have that and Favors is rolling to the basket and you have shooters everywhere, we're 31 of 62 over the last eight games on corner threes, 50%. But 62 is a lot. It's a huge change to who we are, how we're playing. And it has huge implications on what happens moving forward. Our offensive rating with Favors and Gobert on the floor together was a 93.2. With Ricky and Rudy on the floor together is a 92.7. And the real story there is that when Ricky, Rudy, and Derek are on the floor together, there's a pretty good argument that the offense doesn't work. It was at a 90.8. Okay? Defense, we're still figuring it out. Teams have missed threes against us recently. That's the number one most variable number in the NBA that usually regresses to the mean. But the first four games without Rudy, we were overshifting to help at the paint, and there were a bunch of cases of it. You could see it on video. It was really actually, you didn't even see it on video. It was really obvious. And teams shot 43% from three. In the last four games, they're shooting 29% from three. Effective field goal percentage of opponents in the first four games was 56. It's down to 49. The only problem is we are not defending the rim. Teams are shooting 75% at the rim against us in the last four games, which is last in the NBA. So, as we've taken away the three, we're giving up some rim shots. And frankly, we're not a great defensive team without Rudy Gobert. Now, the wild card here that is, you know, worth talking about at some point is when Rudy comes back, how do you maintain for a spread floor, give Derek enough minutes to keep him happy, and will we be good enough defensively? It's a pretty interesting Pretty interesting question. I am so fired up about the play of Rodney Hood. If we go back, and we talked about it earlier, and you go back at the look at the first year that Gordon Hayward was a primary guy. Yes, we still speak his name occasionally. And you look back at the first year that Gordon hit his first opening period of time, his numbers matched exactly to Rodney Hood's through the first like 12 or whatever games. And then Gordon kind of figured it out. And there were still ups and downs, and there were a lot of turnovers late in games and things like that. But if you look at Gordon Hayward's, yes, every time I go to his basketball reference page and see him in a Celtic uniform, it pisses me off. I was just wondering if anybody wondered. But if you look at his opening 11 games in the year he was the go-to guy, his first 11 games as a go-to guy, he shot 39.5% from the field, and he shot 28.6 from three. He averaged 16 points of inefficient basketball. Okay? And then from game 12 to game 20, which is where we are right now, he suddenly jumped from 39 to 49%. His three-point shooting went through the roof and he hit 52%, and he suddenly averaged 22 points a game. It like, okay, 12 games of this, figuring it out, and there were still 4-point games and 8-point games, and there was then 36-point games, and it was still a little bit of a dance on him trying to figure it out. Let's go look at Rodney's year this year. And it's a little different because Rod's coming off the bench. Quinn's just figured out how to use him. But let's go find Rodney's first 11 games. Through the first 11 games for Rodney Hood, he shot 38%. Oh, wow, that's Gordon was at 39. He shot 37% from three. He was actually better, and he averaged 16 points a game, which is exactly what Gordon finished. Okay? Exactly. Now, we haven't gotten to 20 games yet, but let's look at 14 through 20. He's shooting 47%. Oh, wait, that's exactly what Gordon did. He went from 39 to 49. He went from 38 to 47. He went 52% from three, but Rodney's gone to 44%, and he's averaging 21 points a game. Oh, that's what Gordon averaged. Exactly the same. It's pretty interesting. Gordon went to the free throw line a little bit more, which gave him a little bit more leeway night to night, but Gordon couldn't take eight threes a game. I love Rodney taking eight threes a game. 50% of Rodney's shots right now are threes. It's beautiful. He's going to the line two times a game. If he could get that to four, we're just going to keep hammering this point. But his little mid-range, his little paint, non-restricted area game is back. He's pretty darn efficient right now. You know, he's had one bad game. He went 0 for 11. But he's now, since he went 0 for 11, which is actually, if you go back to his career, he had a similar night in Minnesota where, like, the world fell apart on him. Since then, he's shooting 42% from the field, 39% from the field. But we got to stop talking about what he shoots from the field. When you're good enough to get half your shots off for three, which, by the way, is really hard to do. Very few players can do it. We just have to stop talking about that. We have to start talking about effective field goal percentage or something else, because our instinct is we hear 42% from three and we think that's bad. But when you're shooting half of your shots from three, there's absolutely nothing bad about it at all. So we've got to make a little bit of a switch. Rodney Hood is seriously right now, and this is not a small ask. Like, oh, it sounds so simple. He's seriously three free throws away from being an elite a game, three free throws a game, away from being an elite offensive player. And what I mean by that is the amount of guys that can go get 50% of their possessions off his threes is so few and it's so efficient that if Rodney can suddenly do that and then also goes to the line at a average to above average rate, he's elite. I'm trying to figure out who I can give an example of who that player is. I actually not sure there's many that exist. Give me 1 second. I was not planning on this, but as my brain often does, it has moved into that category. Let's take a quick scan here of Rod. So looking at PAC, which I think is the ultimate efficiency rating, in the last 10 games, Rodney has, I think, gotten himself to about average, which is really good. He's always been a slightly below average offensive player. And when you have your first year as a primary offensive player, if you're average or above, and just about everybody in the Jazz roster for the last 10 games is about average or above, which is exactly what we've talked about forever, is if you can get this. The only one who's not is Donovan and Ricky. So Rodney in the last 10 games is a .5 offensive player, which is great. As a primary dog leading the way with this kind of pressure on him, it's great. He's taking 41% of his possessions at threes. He's going the line 8% of the time. Okay, that is really cool. So let's do a quick little search. Amount of guys that get there take more than 40% of their possessions as threes. And then amount of guys that go to the free throw line more than 7% of their time. We're into a pretty unique category of players. And when you, Eric Gordon goes 51-10. 51% of his shots are threes and 10% of his possessions are free throws. Most of these guys are just bombers off the bench. Almost no starters are able, particularly primary. In fact, I'm looking right now, and Rodney's coming off the bench. I got it, but he's still the primary guy. A quick scan of this list. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, which he and Rodney just seem to mirror each other statistically, is actually at 45% three, 9% of his possessions are free throws, which is pretty good, and making him an average player. The rest of these guys are all bench guys. And what that tells you is that their job is to come in and just shoot threes. And very rarely are you able to be a guy who actually is able to shoot this many threes and be, you know, a focus of an offense. These guys are all playing off other guys. That's pretty awesome. That Rodney's doing some unique stuff. That's why I love what I'm seeing out of Rodney. Who, when you start getting to the best offensive players in the league, so Harden is obviously the best combination of any. He takes 36% of his shots as threes and 16% of his time he goes to the free throw line. LeBron takes Kyle Lowry takes 46% of his shots as threes and 11% at the free throw line. It's pretty awesome. Kyle Lowry's the third. This is over the last 10 games. Kyle Lowry's the third best offensive player in that span. That's the kind of stuff we're talking about. If you can get over 30 and over 10, so, and he's already over 40. Over 30% of your possessions are 3-point attempts, and over 10% of your possessions go to the free throw line. You're talking Harden. This is over the last 10 games, by the way. You're talking Harden, Lowry, Steph Curry. Aaron Gordon's actually in that list right now. Draymond Green's in that list. Damian Lillard's in that list. Those are unique offensive players. All right. I want to tip the hat to Tabo Sefolosha and Jonas Jerebko. And I'll do that right before we start. I'll do that as my lead story of the NBA 5. It is true. Little stats boy. He's got cowboy hat on and cowboy boots and is driving a big honking truck. Except for, like, that stereotype is way out the window, right? Because any of you that drive a Chevy truck know these things feel like you're hanging out in your living room. I drove this thing the other day and thought I could drive for 4 straight hours. It was so incredible. Murdoch Chevy has given me a Chevy Silverado to drive. My eye has been opened to both the truck world, and it's been fun. But Chevy, like, you know the brand. Chevy runs deep, and Murdoch runs deep in Utah. 91 years of selling Chevys in Utah. This is like the bread and butter stuff. This is peanut butter and jelly Americana right here. This is what makes the Murdochs Utah. It's what makes Chevy Chevy. Heavy-duty Silverado truck. They've got the light-duty half-ton Silverado. They got the mid-size truck Colorado. They got the Colorado diesel. Chevy is the only one out there that has a truck line with all segments of the truck world covered. Plus, SUVs. You've got the Suburban, the Tahoe, the Equinox, the Traverse, the Trax. And you've got the Murdoch's no-regret guarantee. 30-day. You've got the you've got, what do you have? You have the lifetime car washes. You've got the lifetime safety inspections. You got the extra hours open for all the service departments to make your life easier. You got the price guarantees. You've got all sort. You got the little time period. I think it's 5-day guarantee. They're going to do whatever you need to give you an experience where you feel like the Murdoch family has touched you and with this experience and given you the awesome experience. And Chevy, I'm telling you what, add it to the holiday Christmas list and do it at Murdoch Chevy with Tyson and the crew in Woods Cross. MurdochChev.com. Jonas Jerebko, Tabo Sefolosha are each averaging 8 points, 4 rebounds, and shooting near well over 40% from three. So the Swedish-Swiss power forward is averaging 16 points, 8 rebounds, and has shot 20 of 43 from three. It's a new, it's, you know, they're Ryan, if I told you we had Ryan Anderson as a power forward, you'd think we're great. They're Ryan Anderson. They are combining to be Ryan Anderson. They're just shooting it from three at 46.5%. It's really what they are. And it's a weird thing because I think, particularly those of us in Utah, we think power forward, we think the mailman. It's hard to try to figure out, well, can we actually be good with Jonas Jerebko and Tabo Sefolosha as our stretch four, as our primary lineup? And there's some rim protection problem, and we're not a very athletic defensive team. I mean, that's really clear. That's really where we miss Dante a great deal, is the defensive, on the defensive end of things, is the athleticism. I mean, Ricky's not particularly quick laterally. Rodney's not very good laterally. I'm not sure Derek's better than most bigs that size. Tabo and Jonas are not elite. Tabo's so long that he plays laterally pretty well because he's 7'2", but I think it covers up. I don't think he'd test out. Maybe I'm wrong. He's also 11 years in the league at this point. You're not quite as quick as you once were. But it's pretty interesting to see how good that combination has been. All right, let's run through the NBA 5 for a second. Huge story. We'll cover it on our Locked On NBA podcast this week. Marc Gasol got benched last night. Marc Gasol got benched last night. He even got up at one point in the game and looked down the bench at Fizdale like, I'm still here. You're putting me back in, and he didn't do it. Memphis has lost a ton in a row. And now all of a sudden you have Marc Gasol and David Fizdale a little bit at each other. And they had a rocky first-year relationship. So this will be curious to see how this one plays out. But the Grizzlies have lost 8 in a row. I think they're done. Clippers have won 2 in a row. Maybe they're going to survive this thing. But Patrick Beverley out for the year. I don't think so. You're suddenly down to 10 teams battling for 8 playoff spots, and you've got to believe that the Lakers are legitimate in that. Oklahoma City dropped a really bad one the other day after their Warriors win. They've lost 2 in a row, and they got blown out in Dallas. And in that game, Carmelo Anthony got benched for the fourth quarter. Though I will give great credit to everybody at Oklahoma City. Every article you read, everything about them and everything they're saying, was they've been totally professional. No one's complained yet. They all seem they're in on this. The only thing is they've lost 8 of 12. And their wins are against the Clippers, the Mavericks, the Bulls, and then the Warriors. Their overall wins of the seasons are the Knicks on opening night, Indiana, which turns out to be pretty good. The Bulls, they've beaten them twice. The Bucks, which is a good win. The Clippers in the midst of their losing streak, and the Mavericks and the Warriors. It's not that, and there aren't a lot of signs right now that this thing's turning around. And Carmelo's not been terrible, frankly. It's probably been Russ, but you watch them play, and the minute Russ gets frenetic, then they're starting into their my turn. Each guy's taking his turn, and it's Paul George. Frankly, looks out of sorts. Paul George is not a good isolation player. And is suddenly doing a ton of isolation stuff, which is not his strength. And it's showing up a great deal. In fact, if you look at the isolation numbers on Oklahoma City, and I will find those for you. They're not good. The isolation numbers on OKC Russell Westbrook on points off isolation is a 0.97. Carmelo's a 0.89. And Paul George is 0.72. He's in the 16th percentile of all players in the NBA. There's another way to look at it, which is what actually makes it worse and puts him as basically, you know, one of the least good isolation players. They also are playing the most isolation of any team in the league. When you run isolation plays, actually, I guess they're the Dallas is one, Clippers are two, OKC is three. Yet, with that said, with all this talent and all this isolation, they're not particularly good at it. So they're 18th in the league in isolation. It's not a great play. And they're running, per 100 possessions, they're running the third most of anyone in the league, about 19 a game. So I don't know how they fix this thing. By the way, if you're wondering who best in the league in isolation is, it's Houston, and Utah's second. we run almost none, though. We're 18th in the league at it, or in the amount, maybe 19th. Houston runs the fifth most. That's just how great James Harden is. So that's a quick rundown of the NBA 5. That gives us your wrap on today's show, brought to you by Slow the Flow. Tip-off tip for you, leaks in your home cost money, waste water, they're easy to fix, so you can save 10% on your water bills. Go to slowtheflow.org. Also brought to you by Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross. Go say hi to Tyson and the guys and see what they've got for the remaining days of November. December deals coming up as well around the holidays, so should be exciting times. And if you have not gotten in one of these Silverado trucks, I strongly suggest it. This has been Locked on Jazz.